visit went from 100% great rock and roll radio to kind of an okay show.
He's coming in.
New Sun magazine.
That's always good.
Yeah,
that's
a story that must be read.
Yes.
And we have the 1989 summer predictions from...
To ask Dave.
And plus, now, we were going to get David a yes man, of course, when he was supposed to come in 2 weeks ago, but because he did postpone this whole visit, we were a little ticked off.
Pissed is what we are.
We're peeved.
Yeah.
We're livid.
That's what we are.
That's why we're going to give him today a maybe man.
That's right. Now, you know, if David comes in and he's okay and he has fun with us, we may upgrade that to a yes man at some point during the broadcast.
But starting out, he's going to have a maybe man, and you can have your chance to be Dave's maybe man.
I suppose there's also a possibility that he could turn into a no man.
You never know. You never know. We just don't want to. We don't want to confine ourselves to one particular rule there. So we're just going to go with it, see what happens, and move on. Damn it!
Okay. You know, we got to get that thing rolling.
Are we making any sense today?
Not at all.
Okay, then.
Not at all.
As long as we know it,
sick people.
As long as we know it.
2 minutes after 7 o'clock. It's the Mark and Brian program. We're going to be back. The show starts next break.
That's right. See you in a minute.
You know how it feels when you put.
Something.
And now David Cassidy will be in at some point this hour, so we invite you to stand by for that.
And we're imbalanced here. That's
yes,
the deal.
Yes.
It's been a while.
Yes.
And we could go with one or two things. Of course, we have the Spock thoughts.
Right.
95.5 KLOS. Mark and Brian program, 21 minutes till 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
Laura? Tell Laura. Laura, we need a maybe man, okay? We had like five of them on the phone.
Laura, can you hear us? Okay, again, they're just not listening to us at this point. Maybe man. All right, and
just get us one. Okay.
All right, now David Cassidy's in the room with us, and as we put on our headphones, the record's fading, we put on our headphones to go ahead and do the show. David's first comment was, well, here we go.
Yeah.
Get ready for it.
And
here we go.
Wait, Joe
good
on
morning,
line.
Los Angeles.
Joe on what line?
Line 12. That was David Cassidy right there.
Hey, Joe?
Maybe Mark O'Brien.
No. Okay. We need a maybe man. You want to be the guy?
Maybe Mark O'Brien.
Okay, well, now you have to say maybe Dave.
Maybe Dave.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
As in your plumber? Dave?
Yeah, you remember him.
Maybe Dave.
Now if the interview Dave. Goes well and we start liking him like we used to, then it can be, yes, Mr. Dave and Cassidy Superstar.
Right, that kind of thing.
Or Mr. Dave to you.
But at this point, it's maybe Dave.
Maybe Dave.
Maybe Dave.
Okay.
All right.
So you be there whenever he needs you. You come up with that, okay?
Maybe Dave.
All right, then.
David, thanks for coming in.
Hey, pleasure to be here.
David
just at long last,
just back from Russia?
Yes, of the USSR.
Now, one thing that we
come
do want to tell...
Well, no. I've been listening to the show this morning.
No, listen. See, we're very honest with you.
A little unbalanced. We need some 60s poetry, maybe.
We sure do.
How
and
about
if,
that?
If we spring into it at any time, just be ready for it.
We have that for you.
No, the situation...
I happen to bring some.
Now, the situation is that we had you scheduled a couple of 3 weeks ago.
So I heard.
And we had a really neat thing planned where we were going to take you out to the parking lot, introduce you to... thousands.
And you can only imagine how I would have enjoyed that.
Oh, yeah, well...
Being in the parking lot, 7:30 in the morning, for nothing, showing up in my car, having people keying the car, huh? Yeah.
Wait a minute. For nothing, you mean financial?
I never liked him. No.
Oh,
great
okay.
financial rewards
well,
here.
Okay, right. What we basically found out, he was called off to Russia or an emergency meeting in New York or something.
Regarding that.
And, he let us know that it was probably a good thing he didn't get to show that day because he said that he wouldn't sing I Think I Love You.
Well... He was very adamant about it.
Cassidy,
fellas,
says,
let me just say, there would have been no way I was going to sing that song. Let me just say.
As we think back, there wasn't any beating around the bush.
Yeah.
It was pretty much to the point.
There's two chances I would have sang that song. Slim and Get the Hell Out of My Office.
Okay, then.
Those are the two chances.
We'll take that and we know what you mean.
But no, you didn't want to do that. We didn't want to push you.
Well,
we thought you'd like it. We didn't know that you would have a problem.
Let's just go back and let's do 30 seconds of serious radio.
Okay.
And then the rest of it, we'll just screw around.
Okay.
12 years ago, something there, 13 years ago,
mm-hmm.
I was going through one of my two or three nervous breakdowns, and really seriously not knowing what I wanted to do with my life, and having gone through 5 years of being a lunchbox and a bubblegum card, and carrying the albatross of being a quote-unquote teen idol
mm-hmm.
around with me,
mm-hmm.
someone who... it was seriously not me at all. The image that I portrayed and they created through the machinery of those lunchboxes and through the television show caused me a lot of problems, personal problems and emotional problems. I couldn't cope with it. I couldn't cope with the way people looked at me. And I kept constantly trying to tell people, I'm really not this lame.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I'm really not this guy. We can talk about my illustrious past before I got into show business. during the '60s, that summer of love.
Oh yeah.
When I got kicked out of three high schools. You know, I wasn't a bad boy, but I was
to rebel you.
I was a screwing around guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, it was hard for me to carry that with me, and I think I Love You really represents that whole thing, and I closed the chapter on that, you know?
As you have
it's
the
over.
Right to do. Yeah, see, we just looked at it as a fun thing.
It's
you know,
fun.
We'll have you up.
If
we'll
you didn't have to sing it, it would have been fun.
But we would have sang it
I
to
know you.
You know, yeah. We want it as a tribute to you. But again,
Think I don't appreciate it. And don't think, honestly, that I didn't appreciate all of the letters and the cards and the gifts and everything. Honestly, that really means a lot to me. Mm-hmm. I have to say, bottom line, it's just... as Dylan once said, I ain't going to work on Maggie's Farm no more. I ain't going to sing that song no more.
Mm-hmm. Understand the reasoning. We weren't aware, of course, the difficulties you had in that situation. And
how could
we,
you?
No, we of course, did.
You never wrote to us. So, I mean, we
never did. You know,
I tried.
Not once.
I tried.
No phone calls.
You rejected my letters. Well, you said you didn't want to.
But then, you know, then as we got on the phone, you were kind enough to tell us exactly how you felt about doing the song.
Well, as we spoke before we went on the air, it's a good thing I did have to rush off. Otherwise, you guys would have been eating your shoes out
there. Yeah, we would have. Not opposed to doing that.
No, we've had to do that many times before.
Love that leather.
I used to.
We'll love do that it again.
But those the problems you went through after the show, we really had no idea that it was like that.
I had to retire, honestly, because I really didn't know what I wanted to do. I started off being a very serious actor, and I was doing theater in New York. I graduated from high school out here, and I went, I worked my last year out here with the LA Theater Company, and I was an actor who was, all I really wanted to do was work and gain experience. I did a Broadway show. I came out here, and they brought me back to do a test for a movie when I was 19 years old. And from that, I started doing guest shots on television, and it happened for me very quickly. Mm-hmm. It was fortunate at the time, but yet in hindsight, in retrospect, it was unfortunate. It happened to me so... like meteoric.
Yeah.
The success was, you know, within a year, I was on the cover of all those fabulous magazines that we all loved.
Mm-hmm. Field and Stream.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
No.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Leather and Rubber. Sorry.
But you
get that?
It's early, isn't it, L.A.? Huh?
No, but you didn't have the background to prepare you for that kind of catapult.
No one has that kind. You know, I mean, I very much can understand and relate to where Michael Jackson is now, and I honestly wouldn't trade places with him for all of that tea in China.
You know, we need to talk about that in depth, because that must be an awfully lonesome place to be.
It's an empty, lonely place to be.
We experienced the teen idol.
End of Lonely Street.
You should write a song. Yeah. How about that? We experienced the David Cassidy teen idol thing through many ways. Our sisters, my older sister, went through the whole thing. And plus, well, we loved your show, too, as young kids. I mean, we wanted to be just like, we wanted to wear a hair like you.
If our hair wasn't Keith Partridge, then we wouldn't.
You're in trouble.
Sorry.
That's it?
Yeah. But
if mine wasn't, I was really in trouble. You have no idea.
The pressure
maintaining
of that.
That was part of it, honestly.
Sure.
I was going for the Shirley Jones thing for just a couple of weeks.
Just a quick thing.
I figured
just
the David
Cassidy thing and then move on.
But that's how we remember it. I personally didn't know that it was so massive. We get letters all last week about how women were throwing themselves through plate glass windows in England and jumping into the river trying to get to your boat.
Mm.
I mean, almost killing themselves to do this.
Now, that must have been crazy for you to fathom also.
Well, you know, as I said before, you can't be prepared for this. I was just an actor. I'm just a guy who's doing this. And suddenly all of this stuff, madness, happens.
Mm-hmm.
And it screws you up. You know, there's no way in the world you can come out of it the same way. I think I think at the time I was seriously affected by it, and I found myself more and more confused about what the hell I wanted to do with my life, and why. I mean, I wanted to be an actor, and I wanted to be a good actor, and you know, when I was in high school, I was in rock and roll bands, and while I stayed in high school long enough, and I played music for fun, and it was always fun. I went after my career for fun. Suddenly, it didn't become fun anymore. It was really serious, serious business. I was working 18 hours a day. I was going out of town on the weekends doing concerts. I became this sort of joke, you know, that for me it was a joke. You know, my friends would come over that knew me before and knew I was raised playing serious blues and rock and roll and all that. And I'm singing this stuff that is, you know, it was hard to sing.
It
wasn't what I wanted to do at all. Mm-hmm. Wasn't what I was writing. Wasn't what I was playing. So it was tough being that guy. And a lot of people my own age were really threatened by my success, by my fame, by the money, by all of the madness, the attention, the girls. And, you know, people resent you for that. And that was even hard for me. Sure. I took it personally, you know.
Sure.
In the end, I don't take it personally anymore. I just don't do what I don't want to do.
Yeah.
And
I do
now what I want to do, and I like my life a lot. I'm really happy. I'm doing the kind of work I want to do.
So at what point did it go from, gee, this is neat, get to stay in all these hotels, and ain't I popular, to, I hate this. Was it during the show?
A minute and a half.
Really?
Honestly,
it just didn't take long?
It took about a day when people went, wow, look at you, it's you. And I thought, gee, people know who I am. Isn't this cool?
Mm-hmm.
The next day, you know, and there are 400 people waiting outside the studio for me to get in. And suddenly I went, I'm not so sure about this.
This is a hassle.
This is a drag. And then people following you home. I had to move out of my house, FBI. And the police department, private detective, serious kidnapping threat. Had to move out of my house 3.5 weeks, living with this soldier in my room at the Holiday Inn. And I'm not so sure I want to undress in front of this guy, okay?
Undressing in front of a soldier.
I know, he's looking at me going,
he almost looked like a girl.
Uh-huh. He'd be good enough for tonight.
Oh, God. All right, listen, we could go ahead and take our Maybe Man. We could go ahead and upgrade him right now.
I always think of the same thing. Hey, Joe?
Maybe, Dave.
No, you're not a Maybe Man anymore.
It's now going to be Yes, Sir, Mr. Cassidy.
Oh, No.
Yes, Sir, Mr. Cassidy, sir.
It's already done. No, it's done, Dave.
Please. I feel very awkward. if you speak to my father, who's no longer with us, you could call him Mr. Cassidy. You can just call me David. That'll work.
All right. That's what he has requested. So.
Or how about, yes, David, sir, man who stripped in front of a soldier.
There you go. Good one.
I like it.
All right.
I'll live with that.
Let's hear you go with it there.
Yes, David, sir, man who...
Stripped. In front of a soldier.
In front of a soldier.
Sir.
Actually, who wouldn't strip in front of a soldier.
All right, we got several things. We want to discuss some more of that. That's fairly interesting.
Yeah.
You've been to Russia.
Yeah.
You've got some new music.
Just got back. That's right.
Plus, we want to put you on the phone with Danny Bonaducci.
Oh, boy.
And we have a tape. When Danny was on our show a few months back, we have a tape. A few quotes from him talking about your wonderful life there on the studio.
You can only imagine. In pursuit of the quintessential bimbo.
We have all that coming up. Plus, we'll be playing some Ask David on the phone. So please don't go away. It's the Mark O'Brien program with David Cassidy.
People love to come.
Remember him?
Very well.
Yeah. Okay.
He played the little red-headed kid on the Partridge
and
Band.
Some of those those mean bass licks have gone down in the annals of...
into the what?
Annals.
Annals.
That's what it'd be.
The other way was the...
the annals.
That was
maybe
the leather and rubber
annals.
Shall we play the tape before we talk to Danny?
Okay, let's do that.
Yeah,
let's
hang on, Danny. We're going to play your
Come
tape.
On, Danny, baby.
All right, now, we have a tape of when Danny was on the show.
Uh-huh.
Talked about a lot of things, as you know, knowing Danny.
Well, we asked him what the dirt was.
That wild... Yes.
At the studio. Those studio escapades of David Cassidy.
Escapades?
And then he shared
What could you mean by that?
Well, let's find out.
He shared one particular real interesting article. Chuck, have you got that tape?
Yeah, we're all set.
Okay, let's roll it and let's see what Danny Bonaducci had to say to us.
I guess David got bored with it fast, being such a sex symbol that all the girls started to drive him crazy. I mean, he'd come into the set sometimes by helicopter because there was literally 10,000 screaming girls at the gate.
Mm-hmm.
It would take you an hour to get just from the gate into the studio.
Right.
And so I guess he got bored. The girls would go up and say, "Hi, my name is Susie." He'd go, "Nice to meet you." He'd lock himself in his dressing room, and then I'd go, "Hi, my name is Danny."
You were 12 years old, though.
I was 12 years old. She was a model. That, well, wait, it's
no.
Come on, Dan.
You got to do it.
Tell us how old she was.
I did do it, and it's,
tell us how old she was.
She was 28.
28 years old.
12 years old and 28, more than twice his age, and so y'all were actually on the set.
Hey,
in
12
your
years old or not, she fainted. Okay.
She fainted. What a man.
She took the woolly worm.
Oh, big tiger.
Big Ed the Bushmaster.
Yes, sir, buddy. We just throw him out here.
He was dangling in between scenes.
Well, we appreciate you.
Appreciate you sharing that with us. It was in your dressing room, trailer.
Yes, it was. It was with, my mom was in the other trailer where the parents parents go. And my impression of my mother is that she was just sitting over there going, oh, that's my boy. She's cool. My mom's cool.
And your trailer is rocking back and forth.
I was 12. It didn't do a whole lot of rocking.
Okay.
My boy, Dan, he'll be... Boy, oh, boy. Danny's on the phone with us. Danny, how are you?
Well, I'm a little depressed. You're not supposed to actually run into people that confirm my stories or not.
What was her name, by the way?
How the hell should I know what her name is?
Morning, Dan.
Good morning, David.
How are you?
Well, I'm doing better than you. I'm not on the Mark and Brian. It's kind of like the radio love boat, isn't it?
Ain't it, though? Yeah. It's sort of a love thing.
How long has it been since you two have physically seen each other, shook hands, and looked face to face?
And welcome to this Wednesday morning edition of the Mark and Brian Show on KLOS. I'm Chuck Moshans with news, views, and reviews.
No, we ran in a restaurant.
That's right. We saw each other in a restaurant probably 3 years ago. Mm-hmm.
Now,
something like that.
The truth is, see, now that you know that I was lying about David, I'll let David know that I was lying then, too. He came in, and I immediately threw myself down at the sushi bar and pretended I was a customer, and, of course, I was the bartender. So I just sat down and said, yeah, I'll have another piece of tuna, please.
I wasn't going to say it. I wasn't going to be the one to let the cat out of the bag, pal. You could have been a customer there with us.
I mean, you must have wondered what the hell the apron was for, dude.
It's the fad, man.
It's the towel and the scarf that really put me off.
It's the new thing. Okay, now, so... David, tell us, what was Danny like as a kid to work with on the set of the Partridge Family?
I had a nickname for him, which was that dirty, greasy little pizza.
Yeah.
And he loves it when I say that to him. He used to love that abuse. Are you still into that, man?
No. Oh, yeah, I like it.
Actually, he was more than good. He had a tough time dealing with the fact that we were, I guess, looked upon as to be the ideal family. He also had a tough family life. His parents were both in the business and writers, and I think his brothers and sisters really didn't understand his success, and everybody, all the kids on their block where they lived, wanted to be Danny. And I know Danny has been pretty honest and open about talking about, can you introduce me to David Cassidy, that kind of routine. And I think he found it difficult coping with all that, as I did, you know.
Well, it wasn't so bad until my mother said it.
Yeah, that can be rough. I got to say something, Dan.
Yeah.
You were an asshole then, and you still are, pal.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
No problem. And I miss you. Honestly, I seriously miss you. I talked with Susan Day. I told you this not long ago, and I told her that I spoke with you on the radio, which I did. And by the way, are you still playing that promo when I listen to Danny Bonaducci when I'm in Philadelphia?
David Cassidy, when I'm in Philadelphia, I always listen to Danny Bonaducci. He's bad.
That's it. He knows it by heart. Can you imagine? Actually, I've never been to Philadelphia, and I never intend to. No.
And if you were, you wouldn't listen to his show.
I'm going to come and see you sometime soon.
Well, I'll tell you, David, I want you to know you totally affected my adult life as well as my child life. That's the labor you put into stuff. Tell me if you remember this song. I remember being around David while he was composing.
Ah.
It was a nightmare because
yeah.
You were always, it was tough. But I want you to know some of the songs you wrote.
Thank you.
Stuck in my mind. Mm-hmm. Tell me if you remember this one so you can back me up about writing it. You ready?
Oh, here. Oh, Jesus.
Eva Brown, this may sound like a strange request, but if you've time, would you mind dumping on my chest? Whoa, whoa, Hitler was a dumb freak.
Hitler was a dump freak. Actually, the words, that was very close to Betty.
You inspired that day?
I did not write. I can't take credit for it. The truth of the matter is that Kim Carnes, who used to be a friend and used to open for me with her husband, Dave Ellingson, wrote that song in 1974.
Oh, my
Hitler
God.
Was a dump freak. That's right.
Dumping on my chest.
I probably at the time tried to impress you with my poetry and told you I wrote
it.
It says a lot about the man if that's the only song that's stuck in your brain.
Yeah. Comes clean, huh? How about those glass coffee tables?
That's right.
What about the rest of the...
Oh, now we've heard about the glass coffee tables.
It's tough to say, isn't it?
We've heard about these.
Yeah. What about everybody waking up in L.A. listening to this? Huh? Good morning.
Yeah.
Morning, Mayor.
Danny Bonaducci, just go raunchy on the Mark and Brian Show.
All right, Danny, we're probably going to call you back if we think of a reason to.
I can't think of a reason.
I can't. I don't have
this
one.
Point, we don't. So,
we don't have one.
I miss you, though. I got to tell you, I'd love to see you. And when I come back east, I'll try and make a trip to Philly to see you.
You know what? I am in Los Angeles. I'll be seeing even Mark and Brian.
No kidding.
I think, what is it, the 18th? I'm playing in some golf tournament thing.
You're playing golf now?
Is that for the T.J. Martell thing?
That is what that is.
Okay, we're playing softball for the T.J. Martell thing.
Oh.
Well, see, we should trade. My radio station bought me 6 lessons for golf, and they're all in the morning, and I haven't made one.
All right, well,
but I'll be out there.
I'd love to see you. Will you call me?
I sure will.
Great, man. I look forward to seeing you.
I look forward to seeing you.
Take care of yourself.
Hollywood bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. Hollywood, 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 bullshit, bullshit.
David, Danny, David, Danny. Hollywood, bullshit, bullshit. Queen, David and Danny.
Hollywood.
Oh, we're cooking along.
You
never want to see him again in your life.
Never again.
Okay.
What a jerk.
Well, we have a
what
bunch
was his
of,
name again?
No,
I'm
kidding.
We have a bunch of questions we still want to ask, and the phones are lit up. We're going to get to them.
Oh, God. Jump it around.
All okay, right. I'd love to do that, too.
Let's take why not? Why don't we take a phone call real quick?
Mm-hmm. All right.
Let's do
any line.
We got to get that guy. Okay, let's do 3.
You're on the air with David Cassidy. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. This is Barbara.
Barbara.
Yeah.
How are you, Barbara?
It's a pleasure to talk to you.
It's a pleasure to talk to you, too, Barbara.
What are you going to be doing with the rest of your life now that you know what you want to do?
Well, that's a very good question. I'm glad you asked.
Don't write any songs. That last song that Danny quoted was pretty bad.
That's it, huh? Danny has just ruined my career.
Jumping on my chest.
He did it one time. Actually, I can't take credit for that. I wish I had written it.
Uh-huh.
Barbara, I'm one of those guys who sort of waits until he feels it's time to make the move. I'm on the fence, kind of.
On the fence.
Yeah, you know, things go by my desk, or people call me and say, "Would you like to do this, or would you like to do that?" And I'm hard pressed to find something that really excites me.
Do you want to do TV? Or...
No, I really don't. In fact,
not for TV.
Most people. Well, I wouldn't say I won't do TV. I haven't really found the right thing for me to do, and I think that's more important to me now, doing the right stuff, and as opposed to showing up and just doing another one of, oh yeah, here he is again.
Yeah.
We haven't seen him in a while, and here he is in another dumb, boring sitcom.
Oh.
I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, but the right piece is hard to find for any actor.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about Kevin Costner, you know. He's got a fabulous career because he gets all of the great roles that are offered to him. Not that he doesn't deserve it. He does.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the rest of us actors out here are waiting to get the stuff that he doesn't get. And it's tough. It's particularly tough if you've got the baggage that I've got.
What do you mean by baggage?
Have you seen my luggage? Baby, come on.
I haven't seen your luggage.
Would you like to see my luggage?
She would. That's a
tell
problem.
Tell me what 26-year-old would in it.
Oh,
point.
Thank you.
When we were little
thank
kids.
You. Thank you. Thank you.
Anyway, Mark and Brian, you're wonderful. Keep up the good work.
You must not have heard the 7:05 break this morning.
Did you want to hear some 60s poetry? God bless you, Barbara.
60s poetry.
We're going to give you some.
All right,
here it comes.
We're going to come back in just a few minutes. We do have thousands of questions. We want to talk about David's trip to Russia.
Yeah.
He's got some new tunes we're going to share with you. All kinds of stuff coming up.
Alone.
So don't go away.
David Cassidy.
Yeah,
I was thinking of drinking coffee.
You got somewhere to go.
Todd.
Yes.
We have David Cassidy with us today.
Big-time sports fan.
Hello, Dave. How are you this morning?
How are you, Todd?
Ah, tremendous, my good friend. Yeah, teen idol, teen heartthrob. Yep.
Well, see, we've been talking about that whole thing.
Yep. Yeah.
And
got to carry that around with me.
There you go. It's heavy baggage to carry the rest of your life.
That's
you're the
it,
man
pal.
To do it.
Well, we were just all sitting around talking. We all three of us realized that we're really looking forward to your extremely short sports report today.
Well, we've got a lot to talk about today.
And that's enough.
I'm kind of worried about that.
We'll do a real brief take a hike to Rick Leach. The Texas Rangers doesn't show up.
And Jeannie is going to stump you. Jeannie, do it up to the commish. Jeannie.
Okay, do it up to the commish.
Jeannie has done vacated the commish.
Do you have a stump the commissioner, David?
I know what her question was.
Stump the commissioner.
Wait a minute. We got to get a stumper because the tickets are for tonight.
Right. These
I can tell you the question.
I got it. I got a sports question.
Yeah.
Sports quiz.
Tickets.
All right.
As soon as Cassidy heard that the Laker tickets were involved.
That's
in
right.
That.
I'm here.
Yes.
You're talking
I'm
about
here.
A sports question.
While
yeah.
David asks you his question, we'll get Laura to get another stumper.
All right.
Laura's gone. Nurse Susan's working on it.
Okay. Well, while David okay. The question is, who won the 100th running
of the Kentucky Derby?
100th running, well, it would have been, what, 15 years ago? How about, let me see now. Would that have been, Secretariat was the 99th, though, right? 73.
I can't answer. That was 73. That's correct about that.
Maybe this will help you out.
Oh, Secretariat.
No.
Secretariat was, I think that was the 99th running in 1973. Who was it?
Cannonade.
Cannonade.
That's right. The 100th running. And did I stump the commission?
Yes, you did.
Thank you.
But you don't get the ticket.
Oh, come on.
Well, we're sorry.
Reaver Ridge won in 72.
That's right. Okay. You got that right.
Cannonade, that would have been 1974, right,
Cannonade? No. Don't try and make up for it. No. You lost it. Time was up. We're sorry.
Nobody cares. Nobody cares. Yeah. Okay, we got Jeannie back.
Is this Jeannie?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, Jeannie.
Hi, Jeannie.
Quickly.
Hi. Okay, good morning, David.
Good morning.
Good morning. Okay, my question is, only three teams have won the NBA championships in the 1980s,
mm-hmm.
Philadelphia, Boston, and the Lakers.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But in the 1970s, eight teams won the NBA titles.
Mm.
Who are the eight teams?
I mean, name all eight? My gosh. Okay, well, Portland won, Trailblazers.
Yes.
Seattle won, the Supersonics. Golden State won. The Knicks won.
Knicks.
Boston Celtics won. The Lakers won.
Six.
Washington Bullets won.
Seven.
And we're looking for one more team here.
Yeah,
right?
That's the one I couldn't think of either, Todd.
Real? Oh,
yeah.
Thank you.
I was just trying to figure it out. I got all seven myself, and I just had one written down that was wrong.
Okay. So I got seven. Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay. I probably should have
written the Sixers. Did we mention the Sixers?
Yeah.
Yes. The Sixers.
Sixers.
They didn't win it.
Yeah, the Sixers didn't win it. They were lousy.
Julius. No.
Boy.
Hmm.
How about, no, it wasn't them.
Yeah, that's a funny one.
You know what you get when you cross a Jew with Arnold Schwarzenegger?
No, what?
Conan the Distributor. All right, who was the final team?
Out of here.
Milwaukee
Bucks with Kareem in 1971. Absolutely. I absolutely forgot. 1971, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar with the Milwaukee Bucks. Great question.
Thank you.
Hey, all righty, you do it. You win those Laker tickets to watch Kareem tonight.
Hey, you're taking me, aren't you, babe?
We aren't even here.
Sure, why not?
Okay.
Hey, Jeannie.
Yes.
Did you hear what you get when you cross a Jew with Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Tell me again.
Conan the Distributor. Conan the Distributor.
What do you think, JD?
That's when you cross a Jew with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
So you want to go to the game, Dave?
I want to go to the game, yeah.
You want to take Dave to the game?
Are we going?
Sure, why not?
All right.
All right. It's worth
it. Should we work a little spot out so you and I and the rest of Los Angeles can be there? And hey, people 6'6", coming
right
up to you.
All right, Jeannie, we're going to put you on hold. You two can work it out on the phone, okay?
Thanks.
All right. Yeah. We invite you to stand by. David has been to Russia. We're going to hear about that. He's got some new tunes he's going to share with us. Plus, you got a chance to ask Dave or anything else you may want to
okay,
do.
29 minutes after 8 o'clock. We will be back.
Stand by. Bob Seger, Mark and Brian program at 9:34.
Because we can set you up. David, we'll get you late. Just like that.
Seriously.
Hey, you betcha, buddy.
We'll get you late
in
the chair.
Just kidding out there, dear.
We'll get you late in the chair you're sitting in.
New York minute. Right as the song ended, we said, Dave, you married? And he goes, no! No! No!
We'll make sure we all understood. All right.
No, it's a wonderful institution.
We do have a lot of phone calls. We have a lot of questions ourselves we want to ask. We want to talk about Russia and hear some new tunes you've been working on.
Yeah, too. I'd like to.
But
let's
go back in history one more time. One last time. Talk about the Partridge Family.
Okay. What do you want to know? I'll tell you anything you want to know about it.
Anything?
All of it.
About Susan Day. Tell us.
Okay.
No. How about like the auditions and how they came to pick all five kids?
You mean the trailer auditions or
were they going on?
Come on.
Whatever you had. Tell us about it. Yeah.
No.
And why did they pick the blonde girl with the triangle? You know, she was in that day.
I heard she was that in. She last was
week.
In.
Susan
Crow. I heard Suzanne Crow.
Very sweet. Very sweet.
Very sweet girl. Yeah. Very nice person. I haven't got a clue why they ever cast her, but she's she's a very nice person. And I look forward. I haven't seen her in literally 13, 14 years.
Mm. This is the first time. Was it the first time? No, I guess the Monkees were the first, right?
With the
rock and roll
music television. Yeah, mm-hmm. Monkees all put together were put together by Screen Gems Columbia Television in those days, and You know, their show, although at the time was cult and they had a lot of hit records, their show didn't really work. So it was only on 2 years.
But yours did.
Yeah, it was very well done. A lot of people don't realize Bernard Slade, who wrote it and created it, is a very successful playwright. He wrote Same Time Next Year, Tribute. He's a really good playwright now and has left television as a result of Screen Gems Columbia Pictures.
Mm-hmm.
To see the light of day that the artists that create the stuff really deserve to participate in that $500 million that they put in their pockets. It's unfortunate because a lot of people went a different way. And Paul Junger-Witt, who is Witt Thomas, who's created a number of very successful shows, and including Beauty and the Beast that's on now, Golden Girls, Benson, lots of shows, he produced the show. And you know, the people that were involved in putting it all together and casting it, I think Renee Valente, who's now a very successful producer in her own right and was the head of casting over there, she did a great job. They went through the United States of America, and they found Susan Day in a little town in New York. She was a very successful model at the time, a junior model.
She was what, 14?
She was 15 when I first met her. When I first met Susan, God, I hope she's listening.
Was there anything between you two for a while?
There was a lot between the two of us that we never, ever actually...
acted on.
No. There was always a lot, and I think it played, and I really loved her a lot. And we became very, very close. I mean, she became like my sister, you meet people in your life that you just look at, and it doesn't matter if you don't see them for 5 years or 10 years or however long, you can see them across the room, and you just know each other, and it's, you make that connection. I have that with her.
Yeah, kind of neat.
It's really wonderful, and I'm so happy for her. As I know she and I have talked about over the years, it was very difficult for her to come out of that and move on. She's done it now, and I'm so happy for her.
It did take a long time.
She deserved it. It took her years. Yeah. And she, you know, not 2 years ago did we talk about how the world just won't let her forget, won't let themselves forget.
Won't let any of you forget.
Any of us forget just how important we were to them as that. And unfortunately, that picture in your mind that was in your mind about me and about her, people don't want to change. It feels very safe and comfortable to leave them there. And
that's because we were safe and comfortable when we were watching these shows.
Yes, of course.
We had parents putting food on the table.
Made you feel good.
We had no major worries. And it was just, we were safe and secure when we were watching that show.
Yeah, it made everybody feel good. You know, for all of the reaction and the millions of people around the world that I got to reach through that show, and I look back upon it now, and I think about all the good times I had. I went on tour, and I played stadiums, and, you know, I mean, it was madness and all of that, but I got to reach people, and because of that show, I got to go and do that. I had to live a fantastic life, and one that I wouldn't trade it for anybody's. You know, I think I've been dealt a great hand this time around.
Wouldn't want to live it over, but...
No, I wouldn't want to live that stuff over. Yeah. I've done it, but I feel very fortunate that people have responded to me the way they have, and that show certainly was the vehicle for me to get started and to be able to go on and carry on and work in the theater, which I've done a lot in the last 4 or 5 years. And I've been all around the world as a result of it. And people, you know, calling me up now, I'm sure were at least initially introduced to me as a result of that show and became interested in me because of that. So I feel very fortunate.
Was what happened supposed to happen? Were all the people involved in the show expecting the Partridge Family to become... selling albums, selling top 10 albums.
And no, see, I'll tell you the weird thing about it is that when they cast us, they cast us all as actors. And in the pilot, which was the only show that we did before they had sold the pilot, they got some music together. Bernard Slade based the show on, at the time, the Calcell Family.
Mm-hmm.
Now, remember, I didn't want to do it. I found out the day I showed up on the set to do the screen test for this, that Shirley was doing it. Now, Shirley is not my mother. Shirley is my stepmother and was married to my father. I didn't live with her. I lived on my own.
Yeah.
I walked
Did
in
you like her?
A lot. Mm-hmm. She's a great person. But my mother, whose name is Evelyn Ward, was an actress, and we moved out here, and I lived with her. I didn't live with my dad and my stepmom, and I didn't live this sort of typical fabulous Hollywood boozy life.
Mm-hmm.
And it was good. Not that she did, but I think
Shirley and my dad were a lot more in the mainstream of Hollywood and show business. And my stepfather was a very fine director. I lived a much more low-profile life. And I really wanted to follow in my father's footsteps, which was to be a serious, credible actor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think only now am I being able to, mm-hmm. given the opportunity to do that. And, mm-hmm. and I think as a result of giving all of the TV and pop out sort of junk that was offered to me and I could have gone for, I think of abstaining from doing a lot of those kinds of things and making those mistakes, I think I now have the opportunity. I've just finished doing a feature film that I think is going to be a wonderful film.
Called?
Called Instant Karma.
Neat.
Yeah, I just finished that about 2 months ago and it's being cut together now and should be out in summertime. And I just came back from Russia, in the Soviet Union, got invited. I think I'm the second American ever to be there and perform there.
You want to hear all about that?
Yeah, I'll tell you about that. Anyway, about Partridge Family, it was a sensational experience for me. I wouldn't have traded it for anything in the world.
You knew that you were going to be singing that much? Did you know that you were going to be not only the actor, but the rock star?
Well,
like every week you were
singing. As I said, I didn't actually finish the story, but I didn't sing in the pilot. They didn't ask me if I could sing. They cast me as an actor. They cast all of us as actors. Finally, when the show sold, they brought in a record producer then at the time, Wes Farrell, who had written he'd written some real good Come a Little Bit Closer. He wrote Hang on Sloopy. He wrote Boys for the Beatles. He'd written some hits, and he was a very good producer. And he also had a publishing company and had some writers that they hired him at the time. Bell Records, who was an arm of Screen Gems Columbia, hired him to, and he met with me one afternoon and said, well, this is what we're going to do. And I said, well, let me just say something to you. I mean, for what it's worth, it's not really necessary for me to get a background singer and mouth to him. I can sing, you know. And he looked at me and he thought, hey, there's an idea. And they all sort of put their heads together and said, you know, we may have something here.
Yeah.
25 million records later and on and on.
You were the only one that actually sang?
Yeah, yeah. I was the only one who did it. And it was a little difficult. There was no credibility in it for me because none of the other people did sing and did write, which made it all the more artistically frustrating for me because I was singing these songs. I opened big mouth. And I'm singing these songs that I wouldn't have done, but they were made for a TV show.
Right.
They were made for this Partridge Family, sort of Cowsill Family thing that I was acting in.
Mm.
So I had a contract. I had to go act. I had to go sing those songs. And it was hard for me. I was, you know, in my room screaming and yelling and rocking. And I'd walk on and sing, you know, those fabulous songs that we've known for 20 years.
Mm-hmm. You know, just to listen to you talk and to try to sum it up, what it seems to us that maybe you're saying is that you don't necessarily regret or despise the Partridge Family days.
Not at all.
You would like for people to let you move on and do something else now.
Of course. I mean, I have done a lot, but I think that in terms of my success, almost everything else pales to it. It was phenomenally successful. And
so I guess it was bad taste that we wore these maroon velvet costumes today with the ruffles.
I got my green one in the car.
It was so bad.
Well, we thought we'd give it a shot.
Ah, wow.
All right.
Neat story.
Very neat. Now, also, we want to talk about the rendezvous you had with Elvis. We want to talk about that and that situation.
Yeah.
But we do want to get down and talk very seriously about the Russia thing and can't wait to hear the damn new music.
Well, why don't we put some on
Why don't we put some on? Wait.
We'll do some commercials, come back, and play a David Cassidy song.
All right, tell us about one of the cuts we're going to hear, because we won't talk before we hear it.
Well, they invited me over. And remember, what we're talking about is a country that they are not in the common market. You can't. They can't pay you, which is why I guess nobody else goes. They sent me an official invitation from the government saying we'd like to have you come. We'll pay your expenses, but we can't pay you.
Yeah.
We'll give you your 100 rubles or something, which you can't exchange for dollars.
Spend it here.
Spend it here and buy nothing. I went over for the experience, and I became very blasé. I've been around the world, and, you know, hey, what a fabulous guy I am. Yeah. But
we think that.
Always have.
Come on.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was really moved by it. It it was one of those experiences. It's like another planet. The people were so genuine.
Mm-hmm.
They just opened their hearts up to me. And when you see people that have been really denied freedom and repressed for so many years, that's all they know, and life is really a hardship, and for them to greet you and openly and warmly ask you to come and stay with them. And I went to a person's house there who I'd met, and they had prepared a dinner for me, and I the food was dodgy at best, you know, jellied fish.
Fish.
Yeah, you know, but what I realized that they had spent their entire month's wages on the dinner.
Wow.
What do you say?
Yeah.
I didn't want them to do it for me.
Chow down.
You know, yeah, and it's just, I was just really overwhelmed by their generosity, by their being genuine, and really wanting to extend themselves to me. And when I got into the hall, they had the militia into the concert hall, and the militia was all lined up because they have never really been allowed to get out of their seats. Once they stood up and started grooving, the police would always come over and say, sit down. So they weren't even allowed to enjoy themselves. After about 20 minutes, man, they got the militia out of the hall, and they allowed them to just freely get up and rock and dance, and we started rolling. I'll play a song that I closed the show with. It's all new music, so they...
Were they treating you like David Cassidy from the Partridge Family?
No, they'd never seen it.
They had never seen it?
I had a couple albums that were apparently very big in the black market there, which I had no knowledge of.
Your albums or Partridge Family?
My albums, yeah. And they really didn't know anything about the Partridge Family because they don't see American television.
Right.
They just heard about me touring over there and my music and, I guess, a couple albums I made in the middle 70s. And
great.
Yeah, it was good. It was really, really fun. I made an album about 3 years ago in England that did very well in England and Europe, and I guess that managed to penetrate as well. So it was a very, very... moving experience for me. I can tell you that I would love to go back and be there again. And I would love to bring some of the people that I met over here. So I met some writers, songwriters and painters and artists that have never had the opportunity to be out of the Soviet Union and have people listen to their work or hear their work. And I hope I can be a part of. If anything, I saw myself as really an ambassador of goodwill to say they've really not seen Americans. Certainly, they didn't. They were a little apprehensive about how I might feel about them as Russians. And I explained to them that, unfortunately, our governments, out of fear, found it necessary to fill our heads with all kinds of Hollywood bullshit propaganda. During the 50s and 60s, and I'm certainly a product of that. You know, I'll never forget Khrushchev banging his fist on the podium saying, "We will bury you."
Mm-hmm.
That was our way of putting the American people in terms of our fear. Oh, my God, oh, my God. They are so genuine and so open and so willing and wanting to know us and wanting to share and exchange culturally, artistically. They're huge fans of American music. As you find around the world, it all stemmed from early rock and roll and the Big E and before that, rhythm and blues, you know, Chuck Berry and Little Richard and all of them. And it really all has stemmed from that, and it's all come around everywhere you go. In Japan, they're playing American music.
Mm-hmm.
In the Soviet Union, they're playing American music. And they want desperately to be accepted as that. And it was great.
Must have felt great to be accepted on your terms as David Cassidy and not David Partridge.
Yeah. Well, it was kind of, I didn't have the baggage that I have everywhere else. In a way, it worked against me because at least people know, if they know you, they show up, they know your material, that you're not playing new stuff and you're not a new artist.
Mm-hmm.
For them, they knew my name, they'd heard of me, and a lot of them, I guess, had my albums, but I wasn't someone who was there in the forefront in their minds of, you know. So I think it was a feeling out process for the first 5-10 minutes, and boy, it was great, man. When they got up and they just started rocking, and it was sensational.
All right, the song we're going to hear, is it a live presentation,
no,
a studio version?
No, what you're hearing is just I'm not in the process of making an album. I'm just writing, and it's a song that I wrote with Sue Schifrin, who's my writing partner, and it's a song called "Treat Me Like You Used To," and we ended up closing the show. It's just an 8-track demo done in a garage.
Great.
For $20.
Killer.
Treat me like
you used to. We'll play these commercials. Come out and play this thing.
See you in a minute. This is the easy way.
Okay.
And then we will... This is the way we did it when we were 8 years old. We'll do this, that, push that, that.
One of them. Bring that over.
Okay, we got to push that.
Fling that down.
Then that.
And then shove that up.
And let's hope for the best. David Cassidy. Good one.
Thank you.
Wow.
Good one.
Had some range there we didn't know you had.
Well, you know, in the old days, I told you, they didn't let me do that.
Well, now let us ask you, do you personally feel good about that particular tune right there?
Well, I wouldn't have played it if I didn't.
It's a good record. Thank you. A really good
record.
Well,
it's an 8-track demo. I think it's a good demo. It's got, you know, it's hard to write an up-tempo sort of a rock song that is commercial, that... You know, it's one of those difficult things to get an up-tempo, tough, edge thing that is commercial. You know, it's easy to write. But it's got, I like it a lot, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a good song. I wrote that with Sue Schifrin, and she sang it with me.
Do you currently have an American record deal?
No,
Nothing?
Not. Zippo.
Do you want one? Because we got this company started.
You know, that's a difficult question to answer because what goes along with having a record deal is I'm on this path that I believe I've been carrying on now for the last few years that ultimately will get me to a place where I will be able to make the kind of records I want to make and have a company behind me that believes in me today and supporting me, the artist, the songwriter, and singer that I am today, as opposed to, yeah, well, let's see if we retread this David Cassidy thing. We can get him together. Yeah. We can put that, you know, and we'll cash in on all those old fans that want to, you know.
Scary. Don't do it.
Yeah, don't do it. So well, the time will come shortly, hopefully, as a result of my work in the theater and going around and grassrooting it a little bit and staying away from the obvious cliche television thing and doing junky movies. I think hopefully with Instant Karma, when it comes out, I think it's going to be an important film for me. I think it's going to be a good little movie.
Let us also tell you a situation that seems to parallel yours identically. We had Donny Osmond on the show.
Oh, yeah.
About a year ago was his first visit. He came in, and at that point, he was simply working on an album.
Right.
Second time he came back, the album was about to be released in Europe.
Right.
The third time he came back, he had a top five record.
Right.
The situation with Donny was that he really wanted the audience to forget about Go Away Little Girl and Puppy Love, and he refused to do them.
Well, of course, he came on our show and sang it. But
that's because we made him do it.
Don't want to get into that or anything. But...
Sorry, Paul Anka. I wasn't making fun of him.
Of course not.
That was Paul.
But, you know, he wanted to be accepted for the music he was making today.
Yeah, sure.
He did the album. Right. He didn't have an American record deal at that time also.
Right.
And they released the album. It did extremely well over there.
He really wanted one, I'm sure. Because unlike myself, he is not an actor. He's a
rock and roller.
Yeah,
that's what he does.
And he's good. You know, I give him credit. My old man said to me years and years and years ago, and I will never forget it. He told me right before I got on the stage at Wembley, 1974 or something. He took me aside in the room, and he said, you know, I know you don't see this because there was madness everywhere and thousands of people and all kind of clamoring and being at the focal point of all of that energy and that success and that mania. I think he felt it important, the one gift he could give me. He said, I'm going to tell you something. Someday all this is going to be gone and you're going to have to reach down and it's going to get real hard for you. And I want you to remember, I've spent 30 years in this business, and I've been thought of as Mr. Shirley Jones, and I've been through hell with it myself. He said, the one thing that's kept me going and one thing that's kept me alive and gotten me here is that talent will survive, and you got it, and don't ever forget it, because they can take everything else away from you. They can call you anything they want, but when you get out on the stage, you deliver. And that's what it's about, you know, for me. I'm just going to carry on and do what I do and do what I love to do. I'm now doing, again, something that I enjoy. I retired in the middle 70s because I stopped enjoying it.
Mm.
I now do what I like to do, and I'm having a hell of a good time. I'm having fun doing it.
That sounded good. That was a fine tune.
Thanks, yeah, I'll play a couple other things.
Good, excellent. There's more.
Yeah,
super,
sure.
Super.
Absolutely.
All right, let's do some calls then.
Line one.
Here we go.
Why, good morning. You're on the air with David Cassidy.
No, you're not. Now you are. Go ahead.
Okay.
Hi.
How's it going?
Good. Well, it's going good. How about you?
Great.
Good.
Listen, the question I wanted to ask you was that when you get out on the road, you get your band together, which sounded really good.
Thank you.
And you want to do some tours, what kind of venues are you looking at? Something really big or something kind of like on this?
Oh, intimate, you know, like Shea Stadium, that kind of thing. no, I can't go that route. I mean, not that I could fill a place like that anymore, but I think if I ever go back out on the road and rock, it would be important for me to have, at the time, to have a record out. I think that you need the support of a record company, and I think you need the airplay and exposure. You know, it's one thing coming in here and playing an 8-track demo about, you know, of a song that you just wrote for fun. It's another thing when you go in the studio and you make the commitment from a business standpoint to make a record. I'd love to go and play small clubs and or, you know, small halls, to where people can see you and feel you, and there is that real chemistry between an audience and a performer. And I can get up and rock, and I'd love to do that.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for your question. Thanks for your interest.
Yeah, you sound great.
Thanks, man. Thanks a lot.
And thanks for all the entertainment from the early stuff.
No, my pleasure. Guys. My pleasure.
Coyle, a pleasure for you.
Hey, thank you.
All right, you then, bud. You're on the air with David Cassidy. Go ahead.
Yeah, David.
Hi.
How's it going?
Good.
I wanted to ask you about your brother, Sean Cassidy.
Yeah.
Now, when you guys were growing up, I mean, you had different careers going at the same time.
Well, more or less. We kind of overlapped. I was on my way into retirement when he wanted to get into it.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
So did you kind of help him out, or is he going to help you with your music, or are you guys just pretty much on your own?
How much was it influenced by you, his success?
Well, I got to think, you know, a lot of it. I think my manager took him under her wing and said, I'm going to take you to a record company, and you'll be David's brother, and they'll give you a deal. And I think from there on, he managed to do it on his own. He, growing up in the 70s, through high school and junior high school, and all of his girlfriends were fans of ours and mine.
That's great.
It must have been thanks. Yeah, it was tough on him, though. You know, you can imagine they wanted to meet him so they could meet me. I mean, I understood that. He and I, we never had a problem about it because he knew that it was kind of a joke, you know. I mean, I'm just a guy like you are and like everybody else is, and it wasn't a thing that ever became a problem between us.
Yeah, but did you ever grab him by the neck, put him off to the side and say, all right, Sean, this is what the real deal is. Here's what's happening. Listen to your former Teen Idol brother tell you. Did you ever do that?